Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Amazing.
He's very Tim and Eric.
It was amazing.
He's a performance artist, and I think you probably like him a lot because you're also a performance artist.
Well, more than that, it's not that he was always good, but when he was good, he was giving so much. It was just amazing. So,
oh, I'll buy that. Welcome back to Quality Time, everybody.
Hoo-ah.
We are back once again.
Another
Our energy
week.
Energy is high. Oh, man, we're so awake right now. We have a very pregnant woman who is so just...
Very pregnant. She's had the second trimester.
She's had enough. My name is Eric Woodworth, the hostess with the mostest.
Yeah, girl.
And to my left is none other than the very lovely, the very sultry, the super pregnant Miss Kimberly Ambrose.
You know what? If someone said, like, well, if you could whittle down how you feel about your pregnancy right now to just a sound, what would that sound be? And it would be... That would be the sound.
Yeah. And to my right is none other than my blood, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
Well, you know.
Don't talk on the microphone. We wouldn't want that.
As soon as I look it up.
Jeremy is looking up something feverishly.
Oh,
this
God.
Is clearly a well thought out bit he has to share with us right now.
I'm scared.
Have you ever worried about Jeremy maybe thinking too hard?
I have never once clicked on a link he has sent us.
Is there always something in the back?
The risk factor is far too high.
You're always like, well, I'm about to be exposed to child pornography.
I was having a normal day. And now I have a choice to make.
Well, I heard about this podcast that is coming up, and I'm very sad to be part of this, and I am Chris Hoggs.
Who's Chris Hoggs?
Well, after the accident, I decided to join your... I've been part of this podcast all along, so, you know, I'm a crisis actor.
Oh, you're a crisis actor. Oh, crisis actor Chris Hoggs.
Oh, my God.
Jeremy, that was...
Sorry.
You know...
I've been part of this podcast. I've been doing this forever, so...
I like... You know when they say that maybe the juice isn't worth the squeeze? That was...
Not everything's a home run. Sometimes it's a bunt.
That was the epitome of that.
I tried to prepare for it for seconds.
So, yeah, here we are, Quality Time, episode 75, guys.
Oh, you realize, my God.
We're like 25 away from 100.
Wow, it's a centennial.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, doesn't that feel good?
We only have to watch 25 more bad movies.
Yeah, 25 more bad movies.
Wow, no, what are we going to do for Big 100?
Well, listen, I got some plans for 100. We'll have some special guests. It'll be a good upcoming weeks coming up, guys, just to whet your palate. We're coming up on St. Patrick's Day, so we're going to have a leprechaun episode.
Okay.
We're going to go over the leprechaun coming up here very shortly.
You did leprechaun in space, though.
Yeah, but that was in space. We're going over the original.
Leprechaun in the hood?
We're going over the original. Or in the hood, you know, we haven't decided. We're going to have a leprechaun episode.
Of course, you know, what's her name from Friends? And Gacy, otherwise known as Pee-wee's friend. Yeah. I'll get you, Pee-wee Herman!
We have some exciting shows coming up. And also, we have a very special Con Air episode coming up. So I'm going to tease the Con Air episode now.
Ah.
And a super secret one, which we'll have a guest for. A guest from none other than 98 Rock, who's already signed on for it. We will Cloverfield episode with none other than Justin P. Schlegel.
It was a secret and it ended up not a secret.
No, it's I just wanted to tease it. I wanted to get people's wet willies.
Can I dress up as a clown?
You're allowed to do whatever you want. I promised Justin that you would be nice, and now you're already going against that, and I don't like that at all.
Why would I not be nice just because I'm dressed up as a clown?
Listen, he's very terrified of you.
He has warmed up
this.
To me, and he loved me enough to say quality time for calling up. So
that is true. He does love us. Big shout out to Justin Schlags,
and a great
friend.
Way to thank him for that is make him extremely uncomfortable in a confined space.
Yeah, do that. He'll love it. So those are some big upcoming episodes. And to all you quality timers that are listening here, make sure you hop on our iTunes and to our Stitcher account if you're listening to us there. And drop us a 5-star rating. It helps us climb the algorithms and other things that keep the corporations on top and keep us on bottom.
But
so
the white man created to...
Yeah.
Did you say algorithms?
Algorithms. Algorithms.
It's a good album, though. And now I'm going to give you another beat.
Here,
break it down.
Here's me featuring Hillary Clinton, the Algorithms album. Hit it. Hey, I invented the internet. I'm scared of man, bear, pigs, and wet. Get it a little bit, and I'll show you my set. Getting Hillary with a cigarette. Yeah, Al Gore on the floor. Making bitches run for their 44 magnums, because I got condoms. Better wear them, because I'm a politician. Oh!
Is it getting hot in here? Much light?
It's getting hot, like global warming. I'm feeling swarming.
Dick dirtier than a bank account.
How did we fit so much Al Gore into one rap? That was a groundbreaking moment we had just here.
That was quality on quality time.
I'm pretty excited, man. I'm pretty excited. I got a big show coming up at the Wits End soon, guys. If you're listening to this on March 14th, I've changed the format of the show, and we're basically just ripping off the thing set list. But I'm going to call it a riff in time. So a riff in time. The opening show is coming up. We've already got Mickey Coachella is on the lineup for this one. A very, very funny, talented gentleman, as well as my good friend Thomas Simbazo, some Josh Kaderna, Umar Khan, and a gaggle of local all-stars. So you guys should definitely come out, check that out up at the Wits End, March 13th at the Wits End Saloon, which is attached to McGoobie's Joke House right outside Baltimore, Maryland. Guys,
that place is going to be packed.
It's going to be packed to the nines. It's going to be live up in that motherfucker.
That's a small bar.
I'm feeling like Dusty Road, the American Dream. We're going to make so many dick jokes and riffs that I'm going to put a riff in time and space.
Sick riffs.
I'm going to gape your asshole apart with my jokes and my sultry ways.
Oh my God.
Man, I went too far.
It got a little sexually violent.
Yeah, well, you know what? My comedy is sexual, Kimberly. You know that.
Stop squashing my shine.
It's all good and hot until somebody gets strangled.
I like that I've gotten to the point where I sound fat sometimes now. Like, look at that. You can just hear the jowls. Like, when my own voice sounds too fat,
like when you sound like Pat Metheny, so.
Oh, hey, Pat Metheny.
I mean Joe Roy Metheny, not Pat Metheny, the musician. Sorry.
Jeremy, you tickle yourself. Jeremy, you said you had a quick house story that you wanted to share?
Yeah, the joys of owning a house.
You've been moving now. And now, Jeremy, I want you to know that last week, I cleared my schedule. All right? I cleared my schedule. It was not convenient for me to help you to move at all.
Having to take care of children, going out of your way.
Yeah.
To have your children taken care of. And I fucked everything up.
Kimberly, I want you to guess. How many boxes did I help move today? Alone.
Today.
Last week, because we're hearing this. Last week, when I went to help Jeremy move, after having both of my kids, one kid dropped off one place, arranging so my mom could watch my other child, how many boxes did I help Jeremy move last Saturday?
Thank you. Great question. I'm going to go with zero.
Zero? You're 100% correct.
Fuck yeah.
Right on the board. I got there. Waited 2 hours, and Jeremy's lemon car that he bought broke, and now I did nothing for the whole day. I wasn't mad about it, because you know what? I still looked like a good person, and I had to do nothing. You understand? I mean, if I'm doing nothing, then that's fine.
Best of both worlds, really.
I mean, I came out on top, and Jerry is very upset. Jerry, tell us about the joys of home.
That's just the little thing where I decide to go into fourth gear in my truck, and it stays in low fourth gear. So I can't go anywhere with a trailer unless I'm going 20 to 25 miles an hour. That's awesome. So I was very pissed off to the point of wanting to strangle somebody. But poor Eric just waiting around for me, and my wife waiting around for me. And the wife helps out. She's like, why did you put it in fourth gear? Why did you put it in four-wheel drive? Well, I was going through mud. I wanted to go into four-wheel drive. So I'm
makes
the idiot.
Sense. Makes sense.
I'm the idiot who caused this debacle, and I fucked
well,
things up.
Well, I think that's more of the car that you bought not being able to do the things that it literally says on the side of the truck, like 4x4.
It should work.
Yeah. So
either way, that wasn't the real debacle. The real debacle was yesterday opening my garage to the point where it starts almost falling on my head, and I'm like, how the fuck am I going to keep this from falling on my head as I start to panic and slowly let it down, and it's all fucked up, so just the little joys of new home ownership, so, and either way, the house is kind of nice otherwise, and roomy, and nice big fence for the dog to run around in. And
well, that's good. Are you excited? Do you like the new home?
I like it, and I have no choice in the matter. Now I have the anxiety of actually paying things off and not being the bum years that I've had. So.
Excellent. And Kimberly, have you moved into your new place?
Still getting paperwork to the loan people and then trying to keep our settlement date.
Okay. Because
they're always very like...
What's the settlement date on that?
What March 9th.
March 9th? Ooh, so it's coming up.
By
it's
the way...
Settlement date, you don't know what it's like to sign over your life until you sign over for a house. Because you think it would be just a piece of paper that with like a lot of documents. No. You're going to go through there for an hour and a half. And if you could do an FHA.
Yep.
That means you get double the stack. You're going to go through a dictionary's worth of paperwork of... I had a very lovely British man that sat down with us. He was just like, and he was, you know what? He was whimsical. He made it fun. He
very
made
pleasant.
Signing over our life a fucking blast. Like, if this guy was the devil, I was ready to give him my soul at this point because he was just so goddamn charming.
Yeah.
That at one point he was just like, now this number right here, this is the number of how much money you owe for the house. This right here is your mortgage. This is how much money more you will pay with the interest if you let it fill out to the end of its 15-year term loan.
Okay.
Now, signing this is not saying that you agree with it, but it does mean that you will comply. And I was like, thank you. You don't have to agree with paying the switch money, but you must comply.
But you will pay for it. Yeah, so. I'm not going to feel better till that first payment's in.
So,
and then it's like, okay, we're good. We can do this. All right, I got it.
Next month again.
Yep.
That's why I tell people, they're like, hey, like people at my job are always like, how's the job going? It's horrible. And then they were like, well, why don't you find another job? He's like, because I like living in a home. What do you want me to tell you? I don't want to quit my job. I mean, any job that I'm going to do is going to be horrible.
And the thing that's so crazy is that like a mortgage sounds like a lot of money, but if you want a place that's not shitty, you're going to pay that much for rent and own nothing at the end of that. You may as well own property and tie yourself to something.
Oh, it's all about the equity.
Yeah.
You know, you're earning equity.
Yeah.
Do you want to know something? I don't know what equity is at all. I have no idea. I know it's money that you get because you own the house. No idea what that means. I just know that I need equity to like, and that's the reason I own a house.
I think it's so that if you want to go buy something else and get a loan for something else, you can be like, yeah, but I have these balls here, which means I'm a man.
Yeah, do you see these?
And so, you can suck on them.
You see... You know what? I'm walking out of today with a
new
confidence.
I want to suck on Kim's balls.
All because of Kimberly Ambrose.
It's just about understanding the economy and the very precious gears that make it work.
It's about that.
But I'm going to let everybody know a secret.
Yeah.
If you get like a 30-year loan and you pay it off in 15 years, you don't pay as much.
Yeah, whoa. I said 15-year, but I think we have a 30 as well. So
I need a 100-year loan.
I got a 100-year loan, idiots. I'm only going to be paying this off for the next six years.
Like, the house is only like $88,000, but you pay literally $1 million in interest. So.
I mean, whatever you do, Jeremy, I mean, you're as good as dead in 5 years, so anything you're doing is you're getting over on the bank.
And the best thing is my wife knows this. She's like, I can't wait till my next husband's out.
Oh, my God.
Oh, good times. Good times. A lot of fun. A lot of
fun.
But
she always ends it with, I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding. So
I guess that brings us to tonight's topic of interest. Tonight's episode is, this is a Kimberly Ambrose pick, okay? Yeah. I'm gonna make you live with this one. You're living. No, it's not a rare one. We let you, Kimberly. Listen, if I could say the direction of the show is completely hinged on your one book report of Roadhouse. You understand?
Nice.
You did Roadhouse, and the success of that episode has driven the show in this direction. You understand?
Thank you. I'll take that.
So, 100%. I can't discount that. So, this is a Kimberly Ambrose pick, and it is 1998. Would you like to say the big one?
Six String Samurai.
With a pretty dope ass soundtrack. Listen to this thing. Six String Samurai.
Is that the kid?
Yeah, that's one of the kids that gets shot in the back with an arrow in the movie. By the way, we're listening to the Red Elvises right now. The Red Elvises. Kim, tell me your favorite Red Elvis song.
This one, definitely. It's this one, totally.
The beach video from the Six String Samurai.
That's my jam.
Now, a lot of you might not be familiar with this movie, and I had never heard of it. You brought this into my life.
It's
Kimberly.
A weird one, yeah.
If you were to give this movie a synopsis, Kimberly Ambrose, what would you give it?
I would say a cross between Buddy Holly and Tom Waits with a samurai sword goes looking for Las Vegas and finds danger, childcare, and just a whole lot of adventure along the way.
That's pretty good.
I can simplify that.
In a wasteland setting.
Okay, go ahead, Jeremy.
I can simplify that. Futuristic Buddy Holly story meets Mad Max.
Yeah, totally.
That is accurate.
Even though there wasn't any real Thunderdome, it was close.
Well, let's just hop right into the film here. There are no actors that you are going to know in this movie at all.
Nope. Let's not waste your time with that.
I was totally wrong. I meant to say The Road Warrior.
This is directed by Lance Mungia. Lance Mungia.
Okay.
What's your favorite Lance Mungia song?
Definitely this one.
Yeah, this is his next movie after this 1998 movie happened 8 years later.
Wow.
Is it 8 years now? 7 years later with The Crow. Wicked Prayer. This is, I believe, the third or fourth Crow movie that he directed, and then he did The Garden of Rio and a couple of the other movies.
What was the third Crow? Was that Crow Goes to Washington or Crow Goes to College?
I think it was The Crow Scared Stupid.
Yes.
That was I'm pretty sure Crow Goes to College. Yes,
The Crow Gets a Girl Pregnant. We learn a valuable lesson.
Yes,
The Crow Mean Girls.
So we find out from the opening sequence, there is a little bit of a it opens with the bomb dropping, an atomic bomb. They show it going off, and in this alternate universe we find out that the Russians dropped a bomb on the U.S. in 1957.
Dicks.
Bringing forth this horrible dystopian future that we live in now. Everything is basically Mad Max-esque, and the last crowning city that runs the world is called Las Vegas. And it's run by Elvis Presley, who was crowned King of Vegas. And now it is present times in 98, and the king is dead. And every six-string guitar artist is out to take his throne. We get to meet Buddy in the very, the very first scene of the movie. We get to see a young boy being chased through tall grass and what appear to be mutant humans. sounds. They're making grunts or they're very caveman-esque.
Not a lot of creativity here.
Yeah, think of The Hills Have Eyes from like 1960s. That's kind of mutants
but
we're
if,
dealing
but
with
if
right
the
now.
Hills Have Eyes had no design concept to it at all.
If you just gave zero fucks about your mutants,
I don't
this
know.
Is what
Put
you're
them
getting.
In crappy clothes and make them grunt and stuff. It's fucking done.
Then, as the boy is about to be pinned down, he is rescued by a guitar-toting Buddy Holly look-alike fella with a samurai sword, and he makes quick work of those muties in a very weird shot scene where it's like it's like stretched out actually on the screen. It's actually really hard to like make out what's happening. And as I was reading about the movie, they actually filmed it because they had said so many times that they actually filmed it in a VHS format and then stretched it to Letterbox for this scene because they wanted to. He actually says that was the look he wanted for it. And what you really get is
I don't think so.
Fever dream scene to watch. It's actually, it's hard. It's like watching Natural Born Killers for a minute or two. And this movie really does draw on a lot of those movies like Natural Born Killers and the Quentin Tarantino movies of the day. This movie tries to be that almost throughout the film.
It's also the end of the decade. Things are so settled in what they are at this point that there's no apology about them being like, this is what it looks like and this is the next scene. Like, this is a movie
I saw Rachel and Ross not get together in Friends. There was a lot of things that have happened at the end of the 90s. You know, Seinfeld is over. It's the end of an era.
And all the computers
up,
crashed.
Yes. We're about to get we're reaching the Niles era.
Yeah. This is a movie I watch where I picture what the script looked like. Like, because it's very like, and then a man wearing a baggy outfit walks across screen, and then he goes to a man eating out of a can, and then that goes to, like, it's all very visual, and it, like, cut to the band playing in the desert. Like, wait, what? Yeah. Like, okay, I guess. It was probably, like, 7 pages long. And they just had to figure out how to stretch it.
Yeah. I could see that. This is also another movie very similar to Peter Jackson's Bad Taste, of an episode, if you go back in our archives, you can hear recently. But this was also a movie that was filmed on weekends only. Nice. And the reason it was filmed on weekends is because the child actor had to go to the little boy who plays the kid in this actually had to go to school during the week. So he can only film on the weekends.
I rarely like kids being involved in movies because I think they're bad actors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I really hate it when the kids can't talk and they just make sounds. Makes me want to stab something.
And welcome to this movie for a kid that only makes sounds for almost half the film.
Yeah.
We're going to have you like scream, but maybe you could just not make any noise.
Yeah.
Kind of like the kid in The Road Warrior.
Open your mouth. Just see what happens.
So,
which is probably how he got that job.
There's a brief interaction between Buddy and the boy, and he tells him to float away, little butterfly. I got a gig in Vegas. The wastelands are no place for kids. The child, of course, follows him, and he stops in a slot canyon type area. He says, cross this line, I'll kill you, and I'll tear that teddy bear in half.
Fuck yeah.
So the kid's answer is he comes up to the line, and he erases the line with his hands and then leaves his teddy bear back behind because he doesn't want him. Okay. You know, he's growing up. It's a symbolism thing.
What is he going to conjure up? Something from like Super Mario World, some monster or something?
Oh, the spinach monster.
He also talks about the spinach monster, who he's very scared of. And we hear about the spinach monster throughout this, and he does get revealed later in this movie. There's some things. By the way, you should... I'm telling you, I didn't regret watching this movie.
Yeah.
It's worth the watch, and quality timers out there, you should listen to it and watch it and take in the ambiance. But before you do, fucking whatever drugs you have in the house, I don't care what it is.
Partake.
If you're going to fucking like roll up a fat ass 5-pound weight of some kush, or you're going to fucking just knock yourself out with ether, you want to do
whatever
one of
you're
those
into.
Things.
Maybe a roofie. coffee so you forget it later?
Yeah, you want to just fucking snort fucking crushed up action figures for like 30 minutes? That is what you want to do before you roll into this movie.
I just have to go out on a limb and say I think this entire movie was inspired by the life of James Finn.
Thank you, thank you. Obligatory James Finn reference.
Thank you.
Which we missed on the last episode, Jeremy. We missed on that.
James Finn.
So the boy follows in suit, old Buddy Holly, and next they run into an abandoned building in ruins where a band is playing, who we actually played in the opening of this segment called The Red Elvises, and they actually do the score for the entire film. You can hear their work, and it's kind of rock and roll-y, a little psychobilly sounding. They sound like a bad version of Reverend Horton Heat, if you're sure. if you're familiar with them.
Like if rockabilly met like beach.
Yeah.
Beach rock.
It's very twangy. It's very Dick Daly. Mm-hmm. It's very much in that vein. The band is playing, and I actually looked at them, and I thought, before I learned that they were the Red Elvises, an actual band, I wrote down this note that said, they look like they should be called the Stray Guy Fieri's.
That was on point.
The name I
on
came
point.
Up. Guy Fieri. They all they look like the biggest douchebags in the whole world.
Yes.
They're already planning to kill our hero. We get introduced to a bowling team clad gang called the Pin Pals. All right. So that is trying to shake down our hero for his 1957 hollow body guitar, which they don't actually brand. They don't call it a Gibson. They don't call it anything else. They just call it 1957 hollow
Gibson
body.
Gibson was like, we are no way involved in this.
We
film.
Are not.
This is certainly
we do not
the
endorse
movie.
This?
Certainly not the movie Cyborg. I'll tell you.
Yeah,
that,
it's so. No Cyborg.
But we have to know that it's obviously either a Gibson or a Gretsch.
Yeah, it's. I'm going to go with a Gretsch. I think it's a Gretsch. If we're being honest. The Pin Pals say, which, by the way, the Pin Pals is also, oddly enough, I just know this from Simpsons lore, that was Homer Simpson's...
Look, I got jackets for us all.
That is Homer Simpson's bowling team.
No shit.
From the Simpsons, like, that definitely predates this movie.
Yeah.
So, the Pin Pals, it's a knockoff. Everything in this movie is a knockoff. Yeah. Anyway, he goes, you're just a washed-up rocker. You probably ain't even worth killing. They unzip their bowling bags to produce maces. They all have maces for some reason. Not bowling, but very misleading. And the bases don't even have bowling balls at the end of them, which seems like an obvious fucking choice at this point. Anyway, I digress. A fight ensues and our hero shows off his kung fu skills. There's lots and lots of kicks and karate that goes on. The hero, who's played by Jeffrey Falcon, is actually a martial artist, and this movie was supposed to introduce him to the world.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, this movie had a lot of high hopes of being a big film.
Mostly high.
Well, A, this guy is like a martial artist who thought this is going to be the movie where I finally get my break. And on top of that, this movie had also been planned for three other films. This was supposed to be a trilogy that never went anywhere
God.
After this. So, two things that didn't happen. Jeffrey Falcon was never in another film after this.
Aww.
And there was no other sequels to Six String Samurai.
Can I say the first thing that went wrong in this film is that number one, his samurai sword should have been part of the neck of the guitar that pulled out that started killing people.
Oh,
so
I see.
That'd been my first.
Well, it was.
Edition.
If you watch later in the film, you see that the sheath is sheathed within the back of the guitar.
All right,
so,
I fell asleep during it.
Well, I didn't notice it either. I feel like it feels like he was carrying at one point, and then later in the movie they were like, well, why don't you just make like the guitar the sheath, and
right.
then like somebody halfway through the movie decided to do it, and then it showed up as that. So Jeremy, you're not far
all
off,
right.
okay? You just
the budget
maybe didn't
came
catch
through
that.
Out of the $2 million that was spent on this.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's lots of JCVD-esque kicks, and he makes short work of them and continues on his way. The young boy throws a rock at him and it deflects off of Buddy into some passing by caveman's car. Okay. That is a loaded sentence I just said, but it is the best way to describe what happens in this scene.
True.
It basically deflects off him, hits these guys driving by that are literally more of those mutant caveman guys. Like this.
And why? Because they have big hair.
Yeah, because they have big hair. I don't like how this movie shits on metal, by the way. God, it tries to shit on metal so hard and thinks fucking 50s rock is the shit. Anyway, meanwhile, the little kid who's been following him is stealing a car from the fake Clint Eastwood, who sees him steal the car, drives off, but during the last fight scene, the buddy actually hit one of the gas pumps, so he's in a giant pile of gasoline, shoots at his own vehicle and lights himself on fire and goes, what does he say? I guess this isn't my day. And the worst Clint Eastwood accent ever. It's fucking pretty fucking horrible. Then there's a kid that goes, as the Neanderthals follow them in suit, a kid throws a rock and says, you're it. And then moments later, there's a lot that happens. There's no downtime in this
there's
movie.
There's a lot.
It's
always something happening. It's like a car crash you can't look away from.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Kimberly.
Can I second complaint about this film?
Yes, please.
Is that if it's Buddy Holly, why can't it be more like Highlander, where like along the way he has to fight both the Big Bopper and the guy who sings La Bamba, and they can only be one.
I agree with everything that you said there, even though I don't understand all of it.
Because they all died in a plane crash together, you know?
No, I understand. You know, I get that.
That Norman Jewison song, The Day the Music Died.
Well, we never got to finish the trilogy, you understand?
Actually,
so there might have been, maybe the next one was The Big Bopper.
Maybe. We don't know.
The third one called
Thank
La
God.
Bamba.
The La Bamba guy, that's the Spaniard. Yeah.
So next thing you see, that kid who says you're it, he catches an arrow in the back, and you see four men dressed in black says beware of the spinach monster. We meet these four black clad gentlemen, and they inform the house band, the Red Elvises, that they have failed them for the last time, and he kills them all for their fancy shoes.
Ooh.
So now these guys who were dressed in all black now have fancy shoes, and you find out later that this band is called Death, and they are basically a representation of not only death but also death metal.
Fuck yeah.
Well, it's good to see Chuck Schuldiner got a part in this film.
The leader is actually called Top Hat because he wears a top hat and looks very much like Slash.
Clever.
From Guns N' Roses.
Nothing more death metal than Slash.
Nothing more death metal than Slash. You glammy fuck. Meanwhile, there's a car chase that is ensuing with the caveman mutants. They start throwing stuff you can't really make out at Buddy and the kid. They keep jumping on the side of the car, which, by the way, this is the slowest car chase in the whole world.
Yeah.
You understand, at one time, they don't like try to speed up the film at all where it makes it look like it's going faster. They literally just have a guy running regular speed next to him, and it's a very poorly shot scene. I was actually laughing out loud at some parts of this, but it's so campy that I was like, all right, I'm along for this ride. I'm in for it. They eventually outrun the cavemen who have to keep going on foot, and the car breaks down, and Buddy starts going down the road, and just as we also find out, as the kid opens the door, we find out that what they've been throwing at him the whole night is gumballs. So they've been throwing gumballs at
our
heroes.
Weird in a place where you have no water.
Yeah, yeah. What are you going to chew it up with? Your fucking dry ass, rotten teeth, you
Priorities.
Piece of shit. Anyway, I digress. He goes, thanks for the ride, kid. And the retarded kid screams at him, going, eh!
Hate it.
He
Literally
screams
hate
back,
it.
Goes, eh! The rocker continues to walk down the street. So he starts to try to cool the car off by filling it with some random ass water on the side of the road. But he can see that the cavemen are starting to catch up to him. So Buddy turns back around and as the kid's trying to start the car, our hero gets back to the kid and puts him in the trunk and then delivers a quick ass whooping to these mutants that are still on foot.
Just
right?
real quick.
Yeah, just real quick. Don't make it doing some light work up here.
Yeah,
come out here. Now, I will say that the violence in this movie, it's good. Like the choreography, the sword fights and stuff are good.
Agreed.
But the lack of gore. There's just no blood in this movie at all. And that's the one thing.
Yeah.
Like every time I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this movie would be awesome if there's just squirting blood every other scene. It would be a perfect film. But because it has a violence level of PG-13 or something, it is just god damn it. But it's good enough where I'm still very, very entertained. They continue down the road. I'm sorry, Jeremy. You were about
another
to say
another thing that would have been perfect is that if they made it more like The Mask while he's singing his songs, and in between singing the song, he's actually killing people while he's playing his guitar. So, it's just another thing could have been better.
I don't remember Eric Stoltz or Cher doing anything of that nature in The Mask. Anyway.
Well, he hated the sun on his face, but loved the sun on his face.
I see what you did there. I saw that.
I hate myself. I'm crippled by loneliness.
Pretty good story. Kind of weird in some parts, but I guess it's okay because Cher was in it.
They continue down the road and break down in front of a house. And this part I love. He goes, man, we need a ratchet to fix this, which is will come into play later. Now, this house has like the perfect nightmare of a 1950s house. This is actually one of the cooler scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
This family is just like, oh, you see the ball game out there? Oh, come on in here, champ. Come on, slugger.
Meanwhile,
come on,
his clothes are torn by dust wind.
Yeah.
And he's just fucking a mess.
They've been completely like exposed to fallout. Like they're all like completely insane, smiling faces. Reminds me of like the
Black Hole Sun.
Yeah, Black Hole, very Black Hole Sunny. Like that's the family that lives
My
at
favorite
this house.
Part in the movie is in this scene where at the end of the scene, they're all waving goodbye to Six String Samurai. They're like, bye. Bye. Goodbye. And the dad like keeps doing it with them, but he ends up he like that rage in him surfaces and he's like, bye. 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 Goodbye. Goodbye. Like he gets real mad. Oh, I enjoy that.
So our Six String Samurai leaves the kid there because he's like, this seems like a nice home for you. He just wants to get rid of the
that's
kid.
That's a humane choice.
But we quickly find out that this is a family of cannibals. Don't you hate
there was no clues.
Don't you hate when you think you find this modern, completely batshit crazy 1950s style family in the year 1998 in a fallout zone and you think, hey, I could drop my kid here that I found. This kid I found here. So
honestly, babysitter.com, 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10. Cannibals. Every time. So annoying.
But they're about to cut the boy up, and then we find out that there are windmill people coming, and the family hightails it out of there. They grab a ratchet and literally fix the car by going over to somewhere where the turn signal is and using the ratchet multiple times. There's no way any car has ever been fixed in this manner, and there's nothing that stopped you. There was a tool that you needed. It wasn't a ratchet there,
no, it wasn't.
And you didn't need it to start the car. It's ridiculous. This movie is fucking over the top. And I couldn't handle it at that part.
Did you understand that part?
No.
We're going to introduce the ratchet, and that's going to do something to the car to make up for the budget where we're going to do something much better during this scene. So,
So the family hightails it out in the car, and the kid is left to the demise of the windmill people, which are basically people dressed in like 1960s astronaut gear that start breaking through the house because I don't know if they're mutants, I don't know if they're scientists.
Doesn't seem to matter.
But they're monsters basically dressed up in fucking astronaut gear.
A lot of people compare this scene to that scene in E.T., and they say the same thing. E.T. was a great movie. This movie sucks. Sorry.
So our hero returns to save the day, and he starts chopping down the windmill people like Emeril Lagasse does a fucking clove of garlic. And we go on our our journey even further. We find out that the kid can get anything started and fixes a moped for them to ride. So he's...
Can't talk, but boy, is he good with a ratchet.
God damn, that retard's good with motors.
You had to do something like turn the key, and then it would start up.
Yeah. There's a brief montage where you see them riding and you see the men in black following them, chopping down people in their pursuit. Next, we see that our hero's bike crashes. The kid starts crying like a little fucking bitch. And if there has been a point in this movie where I almost turned it off, it was this scene. If there's this one, I just put my kids down maybe like a half hour before this. Been a long day of work. And hearing this kid go,
His so fake bad.
His fake cry almost made me go up and smother my own children.
And that's what that I mean. Like, if you're going to put it, I know child actors are not the most, like, they haven't had the most experience and all that, but, like, dude, at some point, you got to take this kid aside and be like, I'll kick you the fuck out of this movie. You need to right now.
I give zero fucks about your feelings, homie.
You need to cry real because this is bullshit.
By the way, I couldn't help but notice this guy looked like the actor they should have gotten to play Anakin Skywalker in Star Wars Episode 1.
Absolutely.
He was actually still a better actor than that kid, so...
Well, they could both just fix anything. So, robot.
The kid continues to cry, and Buddy decides to see if he can cheer him up with slapstick humor and starts doing backflips and falling around. And by the way, Mr. Falcon did do all of his own stunts in this film.
Wow.
So that was actually him taking all those bumps and doing the backflips and the jump kicks.
There's a better version of this scene in King Kong.
Oh, really?
With Nat, what's her name? Fucking goddamn it, Jeremy, what's her
Natalie
name?
Natalie Portman.
No, but yes.
Nicole Kidman?
No, fucking goddamn it, who gives a shit? Anyway.
Which King Kong?
The one, Peter Jackson made it, the one with Jack Black.
Yeah, from Mulholland
Falls. Oats, yes.
Mulholland and Oats is the best thing we've had on this show. Mulholland and Oats.
Is her name Nicole?
I'm so tickled by that. I can't even.
God, I don't remember her name. Anyway, she entertains King Kong, gets him to not tear her into pieces by doing slapstick for him. A much better version of this scene.
Like, by the way, slapstick humor has never made me not want to kill someone.
Naomi Watts!
Yay! Mr. Watts! So the kid continues to cry and to laugh at the slapstick humor and the handstands, and eventually he picks up this kid. I'm sorry, I've been drinking as fuck.
Listen, hey, Barney, you want to come over here and do a podcast with me? Oh, my brother likes to belch into the goddamn microphone at the end of the show.
You're doing fine, kid.
So he picks up the kid and he puts him on the bike and starts walking his way toward Vegas in the barren wasteland.
Talk about a ball and chain. I mean,
it looks
God.
Like the Emerald City now.
We see another brief montage of the men in black actually cutting down some more people in their pursuit. He gets to the next town and they get to their very first midget who tries to sell them toilet water. Jeremy, did you see the midget?
Of course.
And how what were your takeaways from those midgets? How did it make you feel? I know you had a tough day yesterday. There were some things going on in your life with the moving and everything, but how did he brighten your day?
It's the one thing that kept me going watching through this movie because it had already almost lost me. So, yeah. And you know, I have to say the cinematography was phenomenal, but I really wanted a lot more jokes through this movie, and I just wanted over-the-top, like, crazy jokes versus trying to keep just a sense of actual reality. It's like, no, just go to town on this movie, you know?
That's what this movie deserved, was that. And what it got was just a little bit too much seriousness. It got almost too kung fu for itself, you know?
Yeah.
But even kung fu movies are fucking hilarious, you know? I don't know.
It seems like the worst adaptation from a comic I've ever seen.
That could be true. So,
I mean, Preacher does a pretty good job. So,
our friend Buddy decides that, oh, this midget and two tall people, this is the next person I can pawn this kid off on. So, they give the kid to this midget who clearly looks like he would fuck kids. And he leaves them with the kid and then heads over to the bar. Inside the bar, the whores are just smitten with our protagonist.
Can I give my other 2 cents a midget?
Yeah.
I just saw 3 billboards.
Yeah.
And not only does it have Dinklage in it playing pool, but they say the word midget at least a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
And then Frances McDormand comes home. She's like, I think that midget wants to get in my pants. I'm like, yes, Dinklage. Thank you, Dinklage. You are now in my top 3, baby.
I like 3 Billboards. It was a good movie. Yes. And it's a very Coen Brothers ending.
Very Coen Brothers music as well.
Is it a Coen Brothers film?
It has the signature, but maybe unless they were a producer somehow, I don't know.
It's Coen-y, to say the least. Anyway, Kim, you missed nothing. We just talked about the movie 3 Billboards while you went to get
paid. Because they had a midget in it also.
They get in. Now they're at the bar after he left that kid with the midget. The whores are just smitten with our protagonist. The men in black have caught up to him now, and the kid sees them pass, and he goes to warn Buddy. The samurai is slowly getting undressed by who I called the gum whore.
Okay.
She's wearing a cheerleader's outfit and puts gum on his thing, and she keeps chewing gum and playing with her
by
gum.
By his thing, you mean his glasses.
His glasses. Let's not a saying thing, but the thing. I'm sure there is a subgenre of pornography called gum porn. I don't know that it exists.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know that it exists. Mm-hmm, you understand? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way that somebody isn't into
there's
that.
One with, they like to include all kinds of people, so they call it Big League Jew.
The classic...
I wasn't ready, Kimberly Ambrose.
The classic Hubba Bubba 33 had the best scenes of any porn I've ever seen. So,
the samurai is laying on the bed, slowly getting undressed by the gum whore, and he's putting zero effort into this.
Yeah.
He's just like... He's laying there like a dead fish as this bitch undresses him. He clearly paid for this interaction. What are you doing with your life right now?
Yeah.
It was a very bizarre scene. He then hears the kid yell in the other room, so he gets up and pulls his pants up and finds the kid hiding under, and he says, "Death." A guy from another table stands up and asks him, "Hey, I heard you could kill 200 people and play a mean six string." He slaps the guy around with his umbrella and says, "Don't be like me. Get a job, white picket fence." Then slaps him some more with his fucking umbrella. He says, "And get a real guitar." So he fucking shits on this guy. This guy who's clearly drunk, hammered, kid, wearing a suit, wants to be a 50s rocker, and just slaps him around and calls him a little bitch and tells him to get a real guitar.
Yeah.
And he's holding like a mini, like fake Les Paul hollow body.
His advice for his life is to do the white picket fence thing. We're in a wasteland. Is that even an option?
Yeah, where are you seeing these white picket fences?
Yeah.
Where are these jobs
that you're talking about?
Makes no sense. Join the war, boys.
Yeah.
Maybe you should go over to Immortan Joe. That's probably a better life career choice than picking Buddy Holly rocker, future Vegas king.
What you ought to do is cut your hair, get your sweetheart to build you a victory garden.
He sulks away, and then we see Death's ugly head in the corner. And he's visualizing and seeing everything, and Death sees him from the corner of the room and realizes that the kid is his weakness. The boy makes him look very uncool. Which is actually a pretty funny line.
Yeah.
I give him on that one. I laughed during that one. Our heroes continue on, and a guy from the bar follows him and runs at him, wielding his shitty guitar, and our good old friend Buddy chops the kid down without hesitation. But Buddy's done bad. He feels he knows he's done the wrong thing. He just killed basically an innocent man who was just drunk and didn't like him because he shit on him and was a dick. He was a dick to somebody, and then that dude came at him and he just killed him.
I'm sorry.
So,
I woke up on the wrong side of the dirt today. It's not you. It's me. I'm sorry.
So he throws his sword into the sand and says, "Let somebody else be king." The kid picks it up and follows him and goes, and he's like, he goes, "You can still be a good king." So that's his first line.
Oh,
of the
so
movie.
Now you can talk.
Now you can talk immediately.
Fucking
you
obnoxious.
You waited halfway through this thing, and now you can finally talk. And by the way, this is the shortest amount of time that somebody's ever given up on their dream and immediately takes it back up. You're like,
you're right.
No, you're right. Sorry, I know I killed that guy 30 seconds ago. The body's still hot, but you know what? You're right. Maybe I can still be.
It's
king.
Not
okay.
done evacuating its bowels yet, and you've already flaked over on your decision.
Next, we see another montage of the kid doing morning yoga with Buddy, which is just ridiculous. They're doing basically like Tai Chi as the sun sets. We learn the kid can talk even more and says 57 Chevy can beat a 47 Buick in a quarter mile. I liked you better when you didn't talk, kid.
The uhs
were worse. No, this is much better. Why are you going to shit on the kid for talking? Like, this is much better, clearly, than...
Yeah, way to stifle growth.
And he goes, he has a moment where he says, "I'm scared of that spinach monster thing." And then they basically spoon and fall asleep on a dune that night. It's a kind of heartfelt
spoon
moment.
Spoon dune. That's why they call it that.
They trek over the dunes and the next day, and the kid collapses and Buddy collapses shortly after him. Buzzards are circling our hero and the kid. Death is in hot pursuit. And they finally roll up on him. He goes, 1957 hollow body. I know that sound. He stands up and Buddy stands up and looks at Death in the eye and says, "Who are you?" They go, "Death." He goes, "Cool." So,
hell yeah.
That was a pretty neat exchange.
Anybody else want to get a tattoo later?
They demand the guitar. He uses it as a club and fucks them up real quick. He sticks the kid on top of the guitar then and sleds him down the hill. He takes the sword and starts deflecting arrows left and right. Dick Dale is playing in the background. He envisions... His evasion moves make Michael Jackson look like Carlton Banks. But their duel is interrupted when the boy is attacked by none other than the spinach monster.
Oh,
he says,
no!
"The spinach monster!" Oh!
Nah,
and he
I'm
fucking gets
monster.
Sucked down a fucking pipe and Death and them follow him down the hill, but Buddy has concealed himself by hiding underneath the sand and using a very small straw to breathe.
Genius.
Oh, man. He's basically Chuck Norris at this point.
Right?
I mean, God damn it. How badass can you get? He hides under the sand and evades the death squad and heads into the sewer in pursuit of the beast. He ends up dropping his sword on the way down and the boy sees it. The boy goes to grab it when he's greeted by the sewer dwellers who look like... All right, the best way... What I wrote here in my notes as what these sewer dwellers look like, they look like... All of them are extras in Slipknot and Rammstein. Like Rammstein.
Like on call actors. Like if we need you to step in.
Yeah, if you need, I need you to wear a mastodon helmet with giant tubes that hook into your nipples. That's what I need. And this guy is just like, well, of course, I'm the mastodon nipple guy. Everybody knows that.
I'll just wait on my grandma's porch until you call me.
Our hero starts making short work of the very first one and knocks him out with his kung fu skills. You can hear the boy below him. The kid who got shot is oddly down there earlier. He has the bow in his back and he goes, "How do you like that, loser?" and punches the little kid. And Buddy talks to him through the grate and he's like, "Hey, kid, just punch that kid and just stand up for yourself." So he stands up, he socks that kid one and knocks that older kid the fuck out who had an arrow in his back and is somehow alive in the fucking sewer system. This is Pennywise's work. That's all I know. Hero comes to rescue the kid and the sword. If I were you, the basically the monsters downstairs goes, if I were you, I'd run. If you were me, you'd be good looking. Ooh. Damn it. You know what? Another good line. Ooh. Another good line. I'll give it to
Scorch.
Him.
Scorch.
So he starts beating him up, but the boy gets carried away to sacrifice to the spinach monster who is hiding in there. Who is... God damn it, the biggest... I laughed at this part where the spinach monster ends up being an actual vacuum tube.
Yeah.
With an eye.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I'm not the biggest monster of all time, but I'm very hungry. Please sacrifice this boy so I can eat him. Like that. I thought it was actually pretty funny that he's actually just a very small monster that needs human sacrifice.
So much more reasonable than expected.
Yeah. It was actually good. It was comical. I laughed a little bit. This is what the whole movie should have been, was this sewer scene throughout. Like, they perfected this scene and then didn't do... it through the whole movie, although there is one other pretty fucking phenomenal part in this film that I pulled out of here.
But a good cameo from Slipknot.
Very good cameo from Slipknot. You know, Slipknot, they have 30 drummers. I know that sounds like a lot. I would say not enough.
Never
it makes
enough.
Me want to drink some Faygo.
Faygo. They exit the sewer system and they see a sign that they're only 18 miles away from Vegas. So they've literally walked 400 miles in the course of this movie so far. Yes. I mean, this is... They're making the Proclaimers look like little bitches. Am I right?
Okay, I missed.
No. I got you. 1,000 miles.
Walk 500 miles.
And if you can do math...
Okay, I missed a major section of the scene. I missed a major section of the movie where you just told me about, and I literally thought that the only thing the little boy could say was Las Vegas.
No. So. He can say a lot more. He says a lot.
He's got a lot of opinions on car craftsmanship.
He's a big deal. By the way, we haven't, up until this point, actually seen our hero play the guitar once. We don't know how good this guy is at all. He could be walking here to take Elvis's throne and just be shit. I imagine, like, if I remade this movie, he finally gets all the way up there.
He could Tom Myers this whole thing.
And it just goes up there, and it's like one of those Creed Shreds videos where he's like, bring, 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 like that. By the way, have you ever seen Creed Shreds before?
No.
Kimberly, do yourself a favor. There's a video. There is a series of videos called whatever fill in the band and Shreds, and it's somebody who dubs over it with like the worst sounding thing. It's usually like a live performance, like yeah, like that, boom, boom, like off note chords.
That's
like that.
Amazing.
It's almost as good as that one by King Crimson, otherwise known as Kings of Leon.
Yeah, Kings of Leon. I just saw the Kings of Leon one this week. I don't know how I had never seen it before, but I shit my pants laughing.
I hate to say they did it so well, you're almost like, wow, they really are playing shitty.
So
wow.
You almost believe it, because the voice, whoever does the voiceover for the guy singing, it's spot on Kings of Leon.
He's got that look on his eyes like, man, I'm fucking up. Oh, geez, this isn't great. So then he's apologizing at the end, like, sorry, we don't usually play this big a thing. And Kings of Leon suck.
So they exit and they find a regular recumbent bicycle and continue on bike. Next, they run into a kooky Russian. No one gets into Vegas without papers, comrades. The Russian army is fucking there now.
Papers, motherfucker, they ain't no trees.
So the whole entire Red Army, who apparently doesn't know that the war has ended 50 years ago, kind of funny. Now there are 100 extras that they've paid for this movie. I say use the word paid very loosely.
That's questionable.
I use that very loosely. And now there is a giant fight scene between just Buddy and the entire Red Army. Now, things about this. He kills, and this is not a lie, in the first attack, he kills about 20 people using jump kicks and his sword, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
now,
mm-hmm.
He actually uses one jump kick where he not takes out one person with this jump, a single jump kick, right? One jump kick, one leaving the ground, leaping.
Single solitary.
Heel kick into one person. He takes out, I think it's 8 or 9 people with a single jump kick. They all fall down like dominoes. Isn't it me? There's never been a better use of a jump kick ever in all of film. All of film. This is the most epic jump kick I've ever seen.
Everybody knows that Chuck Norris set the record at 7.
Yeah, and this
it makes me think
out.
Of the putties in Power Rangers.
It's very similar to
one
that.
And done.
So he's fighting people. He's killed already like 20 people, and then he finally gets to the commander after he's jump kicked 20 people in a row, and then the commander sends out Dragon Claw against him, who is this guy who does some funky ass kung fu moves that looks fucking retarded. It looks like a retarded person.
Have you seen
doing the Elaine dance from Seinfeld?
Have you seen Steven Seagal's more recent works where he he decides not to lift his leg up that high when he kicks?
Sometimes you just got to give up. You got to do the minimal effort. It's called a conservation of energy.
He put
okay?
way more effort into dyeing his hair and goatee and eyebrows to match than any scene he's in with martial arts anymore.
I can barely get my leg up that high anymore. Can we just do this one take and that's as good as it gets? I'm Steven Seagal.
Now,
I always beat up always minorities.
Now, this scene where he fights this guy called Dragon Claw, that's actually none other than the main character's actual real life brother. That's actually another Falcon that he's fighting right in that scene.
A double Falcon feature?
So, did you know that you had two Falcons in this movie?
I had no idea. I didn't know. I feel so blessed.
I had to do research for this. So, he ends up defeating the army. Meanwhile, none of them are shooting guns at him. They all have guns. No. Not a bullet fired.
Well, if there's anything we know about the Russians, it's that they play fair.
Yeah. Well, he does mention that they ran out of bullets years ago. But it doesn't explain why there's shit ton of explosions. Why are there so many explosions? They don't say that there's landmines. Why did you landmine this very hilly hill? It seems like an already impassable place. This makes no sense at all. Okay, we're just going to have explosions everywhere.
Fair enough.
I can suspend my disbelief that... Yes, maybe these are the same 20 extras that you're killing over and over again. I get it. It's a movie. It's a budget. I suspended my disbelief. But you put landmines on the side of a fucking hill. This makes no sense at all. It's bad movie making. Guys, what are we doing here? So he does end up doing it after he gets stabbed a shit ton, but ends up overcoming the entire Red Army and then continues on down the road, but collapses, and the boy, who is very distraught over him being like that, decides that he's going to take it upon himself to start dragging Buddy towards Vegas. So, by the way, good core strength in that kid. I mean, this is, you know, you talk about CrossFit in this modern day and age, and for a child to be able to carry a man in the fashion he's doing by his sleeves.
I've heard that the core is considered like the inner abdominal and side and lower back muscles, as well as the pelvic floor. It's not what I say.
Mm-mm.
I say it's in your heart. That's where the real core starts. Starts and stops.
So the kid is dragging the body along, and as we reach the climax of this film, you don't...
Well, I wouldn't call it a climax.
No, this is the big climax. And but death is right on their tail. Don't let Four Eyes reach Vegas alive. And he dispatches his three minions to retrieve the guitar. Now... they are right outside Vegas. Buddy is walking again with the kid slightly ahead. They're ambushed by the Death Squad, and they draw their bows because they have bows and arrows, and they say, "You either give us the guitar or the kid gets it." And finally, Buddy has a heart. He loves this kid. I mean, there's clearly a bond that's been formed over this film.
Which is
you guys
so
have
annoying.
Seen that where they spooned and there was an implied, you know, child sex scene with Buddy and this kid. Which is, you know what? In post-apocalyptic world, you find love where you can get it. Okay,
hey, he didn't eat him, and he didn't leave him with the cannibal family who could
have.
That
is true. That is true.
Is this the same director as Jeepers Creepers?
He fucks kids.
Same
I got
guy
it.
That can pay for a prostitute and then walks away from it.
He tells the kid to head on without him, and he heads back up the hill where the bowmen have him pinned down. Death, or Top Hat, actually challenges him to a old school guitar battle, and The boys are sold. And death... death is pretty fucking metal.
Pretty
by the
wicked
way,
sweet.
By the way, you know, it's like, you ever, you know, The Devil Comes Down to Georgia, that song.
Classic.
I gotta be honest with you, I love the part where the devil gets his breakdown. It's the best part of the fucking song. It's where
awesome.
The devil's playing,
it's
okay?
Awesome.
Am I wrong on this one?
You're not. Also mirrored in greatness in the Tenacious D song.
Yeah,
where they fight the
much,
devil.
Very much.
Yeah. Because you really, you hear it and you go, oh, wow, no one could possibly beat that. You know?
You know what? I had I saw one of these memes come up the other day, and it was, if you could challenge the devil to anything in the world, what would it be? And this guy wrote, I would challenge the devil to hand jobs. He was just like...
I was going to say sucking dick?
No, he goes to hand jobs, because A, I'm so good at it, I'm sure I could do it better than he could jerk me off. And by the way, if he jerked me off somehow faster, it would be a hand job worth giving your soul for.
Word, bruh.
I was just like, good call.
Yeah,
good call. No, nobody can jerk you off faster than you. Like there's no way it would even be possible. So anyway. So they're rocking out, and somehow Death loses when he clearly wins this. I mean, he's clearly shown that he's better guitarman. I mean, you just listen to it, and you're like, he's going, he's got fucking heavy grain on it. Sounds dope.
Also,
and
this is a classic debate between the 57 Gibson, if you will, and the Stratocaster.
You think so? I don't know. Jeremy, weigh in on this.
Kind of like, Yngwie Malmsteen steps up and like, fuck you, I can play better than you. Never. So
Yngwie is pretty mouth. Really, it's
might
more
just
of
play
a,
like, you know, Polly Wally Doodle. I beat Yngwie. Yeah! I'm drunk.
I love when Wayne takes his girlfriend Cassandra to go see that guitar, and she lists everything that's badass about it.
Yeah.
And she ends it with like a whammy bar. I'm like, ooh. Ooh, bitch, what?
Is it a Bigsby?
I wasn't in the market, but you sold me.
So Death is pretty fucking metal. Personally, I think he won. He orders the boys to stick him. And Buddy gets riddled with fucking arrows as he shields the boy. Buddy is out, but the boy picks up the sword and swings feebly at Death and his boys. But Buddy decides to stand up in the last minute looking like a goddamn pincushion.
Yeah.
With arrows just fucking protruding out of his back everywhere. He takes up the sword and charges towards Death, and they have a pretty fucking epic sword fight.
Yeah.
Very, you know, on par with anything you'd see in the 90s from Highlander or the series or the movies, part one or two, you name it, we're doing it. God, we need to have a Highlander episode.
Agreed.
I love Highlander.
Kind of like the end of Throne of Blood. That Sacagawea film,
yes,
where he gets 1,000 arrows shot at him.
Yes.
Sacagawea?
Admit you've been defeated and bend your knees before the ways of heavy metal. That's an actual line in this movie. I might have paraphrased only slightly. They have a pretty good sword fight, but Buddy ends up losing and getting all types of sliced up. Death is about to administer the death blow when the kid yells, "Stop!" instead of,
da, 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 da.
And he,
before we go any further, do you love me? Sorry.
Do you really love me? Do you need me? Do you want to leave me? Go on, I'm gonna
have another sandwich because I'm really fat. Sorry.
So the kid actually spits on him, and then it starts sizzling. He goes, oh, that's really weird. Don't do that. And then his hand starts to smoke up, and then the kid takes out his water bottle and sprays him, melting him into nothing
like
the Wicked Witch.
I can't
of the
with
West.
This ending.
You know?
Like,
oh, now I know where fucking M. Night Shyamalan got the ending to Signs. It was this movie, clearly.
Hey, guy, challenge of the week. Could you work any less hard? Fucking watch me.
Did you see this special water bottle? Years ago, B.B. King spat in this water bottle, making it holy.
Robert Johnson used to sit on this water bottle on long bus trips.
He would ease himself onto it over a 3-hour period. Every bump and rivet that went over into the road, another centimeter deeper into Robert Johnson, until he had an entire Joe DiMaggio Louisville slugger shoved right up his asshole.
One of my favorite blues parody lines of all time is from Metalocalypse, when he said he got some guy got his head cut off, while his head was a spinning in the air, he wrote "Blues Train a Comin' Blues." It's the funniest shit ever.
Wait a second, there's a song put together wrong.
So now that Top Hat has been killed, the rest of the death band comes over. He goes, "You killed Top Hat. You killed Death. If you ever need a band, call us." So they give him their card. Who needs a band? He's fucking Buddy.
Hence, Revolver was created.
But this is the kid. Buddy is dead, and he looks back, and he's left behind nothing but his clothes. So apparently, he's also a Jedi. So he went back into the Force of Rock.
Yes,
and now has completely disappeared. This is ridiculous.
He became the vape cloud with which he protruded. He made so much.
The boy puts on Buddy's overly large clothing, puts it over top, and now he's wearing a giant suit, and you see him start walking into the city of Lost Vegas. And as he walks down there, he becomes a full-grown man.
Wow.
And he has Buddy's thing. He's wearing the hugging. He's been reborn as this child. So this guy that met this kid probably fucked him on a dune somewhere. there's probably a sexual assault that happened.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure about it. But what we can all agree on is that if you fuck kids, you'll be reincarnated as them. I mean, that's the important...
This isn't a better message to a film.
That's the important you know? Part.
Also, this kid has no guitar training. Like, he's going to what? Show people that a guy once lived that could do stuff he couldn't do. What is the end of that story?
Corey Feldman wished he was younger so he could have had in this part. So let me say, just bring it back full circle, and I'm going to start by blaming the band Weezer for doing the song Buddy Holly. But this was after Star Wars, and the kid is all about fixing things. So not only is he like a young Anakin Skywalker, also you pull in the Don McLean song about the day the music died, about Buddy Holly dying. So hence, this is after Weird Al Yankovic doing the saga begins.
Did you just go full meta Yankovic on us right now? Is that a thing that
long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack.
Dun, 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 dun.
So I don't think that sums up this movie better.
Please, if you could stop doing Amish Pair of Guys hits, I'd appreciate it. Anyway, guys, takeaways, thoughts, feelings, starting with Jeremy.
Hated it.
Oh, you hated it? Oh, goodness.
And this does give me inspiration, though, to make the exact same movie, but with Aldo Nova, and his guitar is like a laser gun.
I mean, I thought this was better than Mulholland Drive, if I'm being honest with you. At this point, the cinematography was great.
If only Naomi Watts had masturbated somewhere in this film, it would have been a lot better.
Yeah,
so
it could have been, you know, it it was pretty darn good. And you know what? I feel like Mr. Falcon deserves, matter of fact, commands the respect that he they need to put this guy in a goddamn action movie now. Like, he needs
to
be...
He really put his all into the role. He really didn't shy away from, like, being this guy they were trying to make.
Where is he in Expendables 4?
Yeah.
I mean, he has all the charisma of a Bruce Campbell or any other B-rated actor that should be up there.
And a jawline for days.
Yeah. He looks... You know, he kind of looks like is the guy from the show Firefly. I forget what his name is.
Yeah.
He looks like the dumb warrior guy.
Darth Maul, very much a swordplay is thing as well.
Yeah, so exactly. He's right on up there.
So it's like
him.
Darth Maul being Anakin's...
Exactly. This is basically... What
Sith
I'm saying
Lord.
Is actually... This was actually... This movie doesn't exist. It's actually an allegory for Star Wars Episode 1. That's what we... That's what we wanted to get to, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
If you stuck around to the end of this one... God
I wonder what
you.
His midichlorian count was.
It was low. Do you have low midichlorian count? Well, midichloriacs can help. And there's like pictures of fucking people in bathtubs holding hands with each other. Like, my midichlorians were at like a 3 or 4. Now I'm up to 50,000 again.
God,
thank you.
I have more than Yoda.
Just so thankful I found Scientology. Like, where would I be?
Oh, man.
And then they looks to the camera. It's bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
It's
doesn't
so
matter.
Expensive.
None of this matters.
Please
none
get me
it.
Out of here.
We know all your secrets now. You can't hide shit.
Kimberly, where can people find you?
The second Saturday of every month, you can find me for free up at the Auto Bar, the second Saturday shit show. Also, I'm at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter and at Panic at the Deli on Instagram.
Woo! Make sure you check all that shit out and more. My name is Eric Woodworth. You can find all things Eric Woodworth at ericcomedy.com. Eric with a K, comedy with a C. I got some big shows coming up. Check out The Wit's End, all that shit. But if you go to Eric Comedy, you can find all that. Hop on the iTunes. Hop on Stitcher. Give us a 5-star rating. We will read it on the show. Jeremy P. Woodworth, leave us with this.
Be a juror, just like Kim Ambrose. A good citizen.
Yeah.
Time, and we got midgets, and we got horror films, and we got a lot of video games. VIDEO games. And we got quality time, and we got horror films, and we got a lot of the midgets.
Midgets! 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 Take us on, midgets.
Is that the one you want to keep?
Yes.
That's the one you want to go with? I liked your solo a lot better than the other one. Damn it.